Well, good morning, church.
Good morning.
And I hope you kind of have a little patience with me, excuse me, this morning, because my sermon is going to be a little bit different. I'm going to do a little bit of teaching about somebody that's important to us, and that's St. Francis. So I have some things marked, and I didn't want to just like type, you know, steal everything from the book. So they're kind of prompts for me. So as I turn the pages, just hang with me, if you will, please. So, did I already say good morning? Good. Short-lived memory. So why do we have patron saints? And what is a patron saint? The patron saint of a community is one that's called upon to protect us. And St. Francis is the patron saint of ecology, including animals, their lives, and their welfare. And he is our patron saint. Is there anybody with corporate memory that knows why the name of St. Francis was chosen for this church?
I think it was because of the location and this being a horse country and more involved with animals.
Whatever, I'm glad, because he's definitely one of
Mary
my...
could have answered that.
I'll have to ask it again next week. Is she okay? So, I'm also struck a bit by the fact that as I listen to or read Paul and some of the things that the disciples went through and what they had to give up and what Jesus asked them to give up to go and take nothing with them and dust their feet off if they weren't welcome, that a lot of that is parallel to what some of the saints, the later saints, chose to go through or went through, not so much by choice. So it reminds me that being a disciple of Christ is not always an easy thing to do, and we have to make choices in doing that. At the time that St. Francis was there, Assisi was not a lovely little tranquil town. It was kind of they called it the Second Babylon. So it was a lot of fun stuff, if you think, maybe, but not so good fun stuff going on. And Francis was right at the heart of all of it. He was born to a tailor, for lack of a better word, cloth maker, and his father, Peter, made these beautiful cloths for people that could afford it. And while he was away, his wife gave birth, and she named him John, in honor of John the Baptist. And when Peter got home, he was not very happy. And he insisted that they rename him or call him Franciscus, even though they couldn't actually change his name. But that's what he wanted him to be called. So that's how we know him. During this time around Assisi, it wasn't all these lords, and I mean there were feudal lords and so forth, but it wasn't a Babylon of richness. There was a lot of poverty and a lot of people who were stomped upon, as there was this rising middle class of merchants, of which Peter and his family were a part of. So even though Francis was the only child of Peter and Pico, he had a half-brother. Her first husband had died. And Francis went to work with his dad. He went to school for a while, but his dad then pulled him out and took him on his business trips to teach him the trade. Well, let me just say that Francis didn't like it so much. And he was not very careful with his dad's money or any money that he was paid. And he was known to be very lavish in spending his money. And he threw great parties. And he gave just about anything of his dad's away that he could get his hands on. And in many ways, he was an embarrassment to his parents. And none of us have ever been embarrassed by our child, have we? And his recognition was that he was a superb party goer. And he was a great person to be in the company of. And he liked to sing and write poems. So he had a lot of fun, I guess. So at one point, Francis decided that he wanted to be a knight, that he wanted to be this great warrior. And that didn't go so well either. He ended up in prison, where he was confined to, it says, the book says, perpetual darkness in a subterranean vault, and he subsisted on a meager diet of stale leftovers and tainted water. I won't tell you about the other conditions because they aren't very enjoyable. But the only way that you could get out was if your family paid for you to get out. And it took a while to do those negotiations. And even though, you know, at this point, Peter is still hopeful that his son is going to see the light and take over his business and be an honorable man in the community. Meanwhile, Francis comes down with malaria, and he's quite ill, but he lives through it. And he got depressed. Well, who wouldn't be depressed after being in prison in conditions like that for about a year? And he started thinking of himself as being basically worthless. So he was nursed back to health by his family. And he was kind of tired and of all the stuff he'd done before with all his crazy friends. But he didn't see any other choice. So he decided to kind of get back in it, but it was not wholeheartedly. He still wanted to do something chivalrous, but he didn't know what that was. So he was on the road. I believe, if I remember correctly, he was headed to Rome for a pilgrimage of sorts. And as he was out in the past Assisi, he was with a companion who was a retired knight. And this, he'd taken him under his wing, and I guess Francis was still going out looking for his glory as a knight. But as they were going along, Francis fell ill. If you know anything about malaria, you know it recurs, and he fell ill. And so his friend kind of left him, and left him there sick and not doing very well. So he was looking for someplace for shelter, and he heard a voice asking him where he was intending to go. And he talked about his plans for knighthood, and then he heard the question, "Who can do more for you, the master or the servant?" "The master," Francis replied. "Then why are you abandoning the master for the servant, the patron for the client?" "Sir, what do you want me to do?" "Go back to your own home and you will be told what to do. You must understand in another way the vision you had." So this is a little vague. It's a little bit hard to, and I'm sure it was vague to him as well, especially since he was not doing well. But what happened was, at some point, he needed a place of respite, and he found this. It was an old church, and he went into it, and the church was basically, it was not being used, it was vacant, and it was not being well taken care of. And when he was in there, he felt almost a divine call to restore the church. And so when he went back to Assisi, even though he was, you know, still pretty depressed, he went back and he kind of humbled himself and went back home to live with his parents. And none of us have had older children come back to live with us, have we? So he did continue to work with his father. And this small church continued to sort of play in his mind. And there was the phrase, I won't do the Latin well, "Domus mei," mie, mia, anybody speak, do Latin? And it means my house. And as he was in that church, it was completely dark, and as his eyes adjusted, he realized, just how bad the church was. And as I said before, he decided to go to make restoring this church something that he felt he could do and be proud of. And in the church, the image of Christ crucified spoke to him and said in a quiet and tender way, "Francis, "Don't you see that my house is being destroyed? Go then and rebuild it for me." This struck a note with me because I think that as we are considering what's going on in the church, capital C, in the world and in our country right now, that we can certainly relate to the idea that the church is being destroyed and that we as disciples are called to go and rebuild it. And that's what I think we're doing here. I think this is a whole church right here. All of you are hearing the call to rebuild the church, capital C. Francis wasn't so much into the spiritual aspect of this voice, this call from Jesus, but he took it seriously with in the sense of being instructed to physically repair this building. And he found himself with sort of a purpose once again. Excuse me. This was what was described as in this book as being his first major step in turning everything over to God. And what happened in that dark little church was the beginning of a lifelong process of conversion. And that was one of the most powerful things I read in this book. A lifelong conversion. You don't just all of a sudden you're converted and that's it. Every time as you move along, there's new ways to see Jesus, new ways to be converted to what it is that Jesus would have you do. He felt like that in some way that he had to commit his whole life to God. But he knew that that couldn't happen just with one single thing. He recognized the project, that it was an ongoing project, and he participated in it. As we think about conversion, what is conversion? It's a response to God. It's a response to decide to not listen to anything around us that's telling us what to do, but rather to listen sometimes for that still, quiet voice, and sometimes for that loud, booming voice that God has something for us that he wants us to know about. So now Francis had some goals, but he didn't right away give up all the fun stuff of the fun life back in Assisi. And he started having parties and stuff, but his heart wasn't in it. And his friends started noticing that he would start the fun and then he would leave. They wouldn't see him. So he was on one of these walks around. He passed by a beggar on the side of the road, and he didn't offer him anything. He didn't know what he could offer him, and he felt very, very powerless, and he felt desperately disappointed that he hadn't done anything for this man. So what he finally did was he went home, and he got as much of his father's fancy fabric as he could, and his horse, and a few other things. And he went and he sold it all. And he took it to the church that he was called to restore, and wanted to give this money to the priest. And the priest said, "No, thank you. I don't want this ill-gotten money." So Francis was disappointed, and he threw the money down on the ground and left. So he went back home, and Dad was pretty upset that he sold all this stuff. So he locked him in a closet. And he locked him in a closet that was pretty small, and the only time that Francis saw any light was when they slipped food into him, maybe some soup, some bread. And he stayed there for several weeks until Peter went off on a business trip and Mom let him out. Hey, Mom, right? So he knew that Dad would be mad, so he slipped out and he went and he found a cave. And he spent some time in that cave thinking about and listening for the voice of God. When Francis did decide to wander back into Assisi, and there was this attempt to reconcile with his dad completely rejected that attempt, and he said the only thing he wanted was his money back, and so that did not go well. And what Francis did then, and this is one of those famous stories that you've heard, was he was called to Peter, his father, went to all these different ways to try and get the law to get his money back. And everybody kept saying, no, you gotta have to go to the church. So they finally ended up in front of whoever the Pope was at the time. I can't remember right this second. And the Pope said, yeah, you know, you did wrong. But before he could issue any sentence, Francis got up. And for that day, for some reason, he wasn't wearing his old raggedy clothes. He was wearing a fine suit that his father had made. And he got up and he removed his clothes and he took them over, including the money that he had earned, the money that he had stolen, and presented it to his father and renounced him as his father, saying that the only father he had was his father in heaven. So at this point, he goes out, and now he's homeless, and he's poor, and he has nothing. But he finds his way to friendly people here and there, other hermits. Being a hermit was quite a popular thing at this time. And he found his way into a colony of lepers, and he decided that what he could give to them, even though he didn't have any worldly goods, was presents. And his act of charity could be that he was with them and that they would know that somebody cared. So then in that spring, they started working on the church, and donations were coming in. And in fact, at this time, it got to be kind of a tradition for people to go and restore these small churches. Francis continued to go and wander, and one of the things that he did that we are most familiar with, that we recognize, is that he wanted to make known that he was a follower of Christ, and that others could follow as well. So on the back of his robe, he drew a T, which is the letter Ta in Greek, and it became kind of a symbol, a coat of arms for him, if you will. And this was a way that he could preach the gospel even just as he walked along. And he saw that this letter T is found in both Greek and Hebrew alphabets, Ta and Ta, spelled a little bit differently. And he took this creation of this and this placing of this on his cloak as a response to the message of the patriarchs and prophets, when Ezekiel was commanded to place a mark on the foreheads of all those who hated iniquity. So you've seen the little T crosses, and they're oftentimes set so that you could hold it in your hand. And that's the cross, the symbol of Saint Francis. So conversion, what does it mean to be converted, and what does it mean to continue conversion in our lives? It's probably different from each one of you. One of the things that I found that is important to conversion in my life is the fact that even when I'm not so sure that that God is there, that he is, and that I have to continue to listen to know what it is that I am supposed to do next. Our patron, Saint Francis, was a lover of all beauty and all creatures. He thought that what we needed to do was to protect everything that God had created. And the healing that would come through the mystery of Jesus and what Jesus did for us on the cross. This is just a bit about his relationship with the animals, which is what he's especially known for. There was a great, when this is a point in Francis's life, and it's written by somebody else about him. There was a great multitude of birds of different types gathered, including doves, crows, and others. When Francis saw them, he was a man of great fervor and felt much sweetness and tenderness towards these creatures. And he said to them, "The Lord give you peace." And he was surprised because the birds didn't go away. They didn't take flight, but they stayed and listened to Francis as he preached the word of God. "My brother birds," he said, "you should greatly praise your Creator and love him always. He gave you feathers to wear, wings to fly, and whatever you need. God made you noble among his creatures and gave you a home in the purity of the air so that you neither need to reap or sow." And the birds stretched out their wings and opened their beaks and sang to Francis. Birds weren't the only ones that Francis watched over and took care of. He freed lambs and sheep who were going to slaughter. I'm sure people loved that. And once he freed a rabbit that was caught. And any time he saw a creature in need, he would do his best to make sure that need was met. He considered the creatures of the earth as his brothers and sisters. They were important to him as his human friends were. He named creation in terms of as a loving family, that we are part of the family of creation. And he called the sun his brother and the moon his sister and the earth his sister and his brother the wind. And there's some great, great music written about this. I was privileged to be part of a choir that did a canticle, the Misagia, which is a mass that includes this canticle. It's all based on this canticle that St. Francis wrote. I'm going to share it with you, maybe not all of it, but just so you can get the idea. It's the canticle of the creatures. "Most high, all-powerful, good Lord, yours are the praises, the glory, the honor, and all blessing. To you alone, most high, do they belong, and no human is worthy to mention your name. Praise to you, my Lord, with all your creatures, especially, sir, brother, son, who is the day and through whom you give us light. And he is beautiful and radiant with great splendor and bears a likeness of you, most high one. Praise be to you, my Lord. Through sister moon and the stars in heaven, you formed them clear and precious and beautiful. Praise to you, my Lord, through brother wind and through the air, cloudy and serene, and every kind of weather, through whom you give sustenance to your creatures. Praise to you, my Lord, through sister water, who is very useful and humble and precious and chaste." It goes on a little bit more, and it's easy to find if you want a copy of the full canticle. I'm pleased to share it with you. So Francis continued his work. He started an order, which I'm sure that you're familiar with, the Franciscan order, which is a cloistered order of men, and with the sister order of St. Clair's, which I'm sure has some connection to why this church is Francis, and the church that was over there was St. Clair's. And Peter is nodding his head and knows something about that, but anyway. So finally, towards the end of his life, Francis had a vision, and At the feast of the exaltation of the cross, he received the stigmata. The stigmata is an event where your hands and your feet actually bleed as though you were on the cross. And he's not the only saint that it said to experience that. And he said that he saw a vision of the seraph, a six-winged angel on a cross, and this angel gave him the gift of these five wounds of Christ. He continued to try to do the word of God, sometimes with results and sometimes not. And he spent his last days telling his story. And it's so important that we tell our story for others to know what it is. So my question then, as we go along, is how does all this that I've gone on about with St. Francis, and why in the world are you going on about St. Francis? Well, because he's our patron saint, and because we celebrate him today, how does that relate to the gospel? How does that relate to what we read today? And as I already said, I see a parallel process between Paul and the disciples as they make their way in the world and try and figure out what their call is and what to do with people who reject them or people that accept them, how to start their churches, how to resurrect their churches. In the gospel for today, basically what Matthew tells us is that it's more important to do the will of, to know him, to do the will of God more so than it is to know him. In other words, like I was talking about conversion, even in those times when you're not sure, where you doubt, and I have them, I suspect some of you have had them, when you go, really? Really, God, is this really what it's all about? That we continue to do, and in that doing, we continue to be converted, and then we get to know him better. So our quest or our goal really should be about doing for God. Whether you know exactly what it is or not, you do it, because there's certainly plenty of places in the Bible that it tells us things that we can do. And if we look at the lives of the saints, there are plenty of things that they can teach us as well. We're called by God to love all, including our enemies, including those that we don't like, and including those that we don't feel like deserve our help. That's what we're called to do. Francis died on the evening of Saturday, the 3rd of October in 1226, singing Psalm 141. And his last words he read 141. I call upon you, O Lord, come quickly to me. Give ear to my voice when I call upon you. In you I seek refuge. Do not leave me defenseless. When his companion for 18 years in the monastery took his hand as he was dying, Francis said to him, I have done what is mine. May Christ teach you what is yours to do. It's said that when he died, many birds flew above the roof of the house where he lay, wheeling in a circle and singing. Amen. Please stand.